Hi, this is Bridget Lynn Dahlgoff, the host of the Urban Farm Project. And today our guest is Regina Concatelli. And for her full bio, you can go to the main webpage of the show for today's radio show. And so I'm just going to go ahead and say hi to Regina. Hi, Regina. How are you?
Hey, Bridget. I'm doing great. How are you today?
I'm doing super great. I'm just really happy to have you on air because I've known you for a while. So we're friends. You're not a sneak interview for me. And I always love talking to people that I know, you know, that are working with consciousness.
Yes. So we've known each other for a little bit, and it's been a fun journey, hasn't it?
It has. It's been kind of more of a roller coaster, but it's all right.
Yes.
So what I usually have people do is I have them kind of give them a brief, you know, history of kind of your life and how you got to be doing the work that you're doing now.
Okay.
And so I'll let you handle that part.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. I was raised in the Midwest and in a very small town, and, you know, I just never felt like I fit in. I'm still trying to figure out where I fit in, but it was really, really uncomfortable in the Midwest and being the youngest of seven children and all of that. So it was a really uncomfortable early, you know, 20, 30 years. And about that time, I stumbled into the self-help section of the bookstore and just started reading all different types of self-help books, psychology, and I was always drawn to astrology and numerology. And so it was like, you know, internal. I've always had like this internal direction, even though, you know, my mind didn't think I was clear or knew where I was going. There's always been this inner guidance. So different things that I studied along the way. And as I started studying about the psychology and how people change and how to manifest, and I think one of the first books that really woke me up was Shakti Gawain's books, Creative Visualization and Living in the Light. And I started seeing, going to channels and psychics. So I had my, you know, the awakening process started around 28 to 32, going through that first Saturn return in that age range. And then I moved to Southern California at the age of 32 and found myself working with a lot of professional speakers and authors, people that were in professional development. So I just kind of fell into it, and because it so spoke to my passion and my interest, you know, it worked out really well for me in my career to be in the training, the professional training industry. And in 1999 was another big, like, shake-up time for me, and that's when I found human design, and that's the human design system. I'm an analyst for the human design system. We can talk about that in a little bit if that is the direction that we go in, but it is a, you know, it's a another path for transformation. And at the same time, I started studying energy tools and understanding about energy dynamics. And there wasn't that many people that taught it back then. And so I, you know, serendipitously met this woman at this party that I didn't even know whose house it was. Somebody sent me, came up to me. I was at this event, and they said, "You need to go to this party. Tell them you're my friend." But I don't know why, but you're supposed to go to that party. And I met this woman that was a psychic, and so she turned me on to where I could go to study psychic development. And I spent 6 years in the classroom of studying psychic development and really breaking up a lot of my family patterns and all kinds of stuff. And it just goes on and on, what I learned in those 6 years and the certifications that I went through. So and since then, in that 1999, so it's been like 12 years, just, you know, a lot of different studies and really bringing me much more grounded into myself and more into my heart and, you know, just more whole. So there's been other studies, but those two were two of the main. And plus, I became a professional coach and have studied a lot of leadership skills and communication skills. And so that's the other part of my package, is that I walk in both worlds, and feel that I really am a good blend of the practical and the spiritual. So how's that?
That sounds pretty good. That sounds pretty good. So so I'm going to put you on the spot with a couple things. And it was really interesting when you sent me, like, topics of discussion. One of the things that has been occurring to me with the word sustainable, because you put on here, what does sustainability mean to me, is that it's interesting because you can have, like, this definition of sustainable, but a lot of people have a different definition for it. People that farm, theirs is different than people that are, you know, kind of doing business stuff to retail, to all those different things. So go ahead and talk to me about what sustainable means to you.
Beautiful. Yeah, there's a lot of different, there's a couple of different components to it. And one of them is practicality. So, you know, that could be, I'll just relate to it as my life as a single woman in their 50s. What does that mean for me to be sustainable? It means, like, what am I giving my energy and my effort to? Is that practical? Is that practical for me, you know, to be connected to the earth, to be responsible, to be following my own inner guidance and my integrity? So that's part on a very personal level. Like, what am I giving my energy to? Is this something that, yes, it's practical, and is it something that has the life continues in it? It's giving. It's contributing in some way. And, you know, living, the other thing that sustainability means to me is how am I living? Am I living responsibly? I've been recycling for I don't know how long and picking up trash for I don't know how long. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 years. I don't know. It's just always been something that it's like, well, this is one thing that I can do. I live in an urban area. This is something that I can do that makes me feel good, and it's the right thing to do, and it's how I care for Mother Earth. So there's that part about it. It's just, you know, being responsible, you know, being on the planet. And I guess it also means, like, you know, I said contributing and giving, you know, I don't necessarily say it has to be paying it forward, but just making a contribution, giving more than you take would be another part of sustainability. So I think those are the two or three main areas that kind of pop up for me when I talk about sustainability. Like, it's also, you know, something that has a future in it. So...
All right. Well, that's great. Also, too, you're talking also, too, and I've talked to you about this before, is that you're also looking to, in the future, be able to move on to a conscious community.
Yes.
And so what kind of, when you think of a conscious community, like, what kind of community, you know, comes to mind for you? Or if you're conjuring, you want to conjure your right and perfect conscious community, what would your conscious community have?
A perfect conscious community. Well, I think there's the ideal, and then there's, like, my next step. So which one would you like to hear? I mean, which is the ideal, or the, like, just like the next step moving towards that ideal? Which one is it that you want to hear about? Or do you think they would both be important for the listeners to hear, to see how it compares to what their thoughts are? Any comment? Okay, so I'm not hearing you, so I'm just going to go ahead with, you know, what I see as the, like, my next step is just is being around people where I feel a heart connection with, where I feel like people are paying attention and really paying attention to what's happening in their inner world and what's happening in their outer world. And I think that's a really important piece, is to be surrounded by like-minded people. And it's always been a vision of mine, is to, you know, have regular gatherings, physical, face-to-face, aura-to-aura, with people that are like-minded, that have a heart connection or are doing their inner work so they can be more connected to their heart. So that's one piece of it. I think the other part of conscious community that I so yearn for is how people live, how they treat the planet, you know, how they treat each other. It's like, oh, this person over here, you know, they have small children and they need someone to help, or they're going away and can someone watch their dogs, or hey, we're putting up this room, you know, we're putting on an addition, and could a couple people come in and help out with that? It's just like all of that, you know, kind of commingled in people's lives, and yet, you know, just being a support for people and having help with. That's what I'm looking for in conscious community, you know, just the contribution and the support, and especially around, and then also the piece around just our food.
Hey, this is Bridget Lynn Dolgoff, the host of the Urban Farm Project, and we've been having a little bit of technical issues today. Mercury is still in retrograde, won't come out till a few more days, so obviously my communications are failing. anyway, so I'm just waiting for my guests to come back on, and we're going to finish up, continue on our way with the interview that we're having with Gina Concatelli.
Yes.
And so we're just waiting for that.
I'm here.
Oh, hey, sorry about that. I was like, Mercury's still in retrograde.
That was my thoughts exactly. It's like, okay, those kinds of things only happen in a Mercury retrograde. And I don't know what you heard of what my thoughts were on conscious community.
I think that probably most of it ended up on air. It was my end that I got disconnected and then reconnected and disconnected and reconnected.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Your part was still rolling along at high speed.
Okay, and I got a little drew a little blank there because I don't remember where I left off at. But anyway, we can pick it up, and you can ask me a question about something. Where would you like to go from here?
Well, let's go ahead and talk about. I'd like to talk to you about some of your ideas about conscious communication, actually. And in what you've learned and how you apply that and use it and also help clients.
Yeah, it's been, for me, my journey has been, you know, my own ability to communicate or not communicate, you know, the kind of work that I was in sales training and leadership training, it's all about communication. And in order for me to get to be better and speak my truth, which was not anything that was role modeled for me when I in my upbringing. And so it was this my own inner desire to be a more effective communicator, because I would be a doormat or I would be, you know, aggressive. You know, shy or bold. And, you know, there's got to be a balance in there in order to be effective and to include people. So, you know, that kind of was from the business background. I learned a lot of communication skills and just being more effective and speaking my truth and being more comfortable in my body to say what was going on for me and what was real. And since I've done, you know, like the corporate training, I've continued on with taking some other courses and, you know, through, you know, just my own interest. And so I've used it for just my own healing, my own dysfunction, being able to communicate clearly what's going on so that I feel in my body, like when I leave a conversation, that I've said what I needed to say. And when I haven't, I have the skills to be able to go back and reopen the communication so that I can get, so that it's, you know, this is a, you know, an old, you know, win-win. I mean, it sounds very, you know, cliche, but it really is. I mean, really believe in a win-win situation where, you know, people can be heard and people can, you know, get some of their quote-unquote needs met, whether it be a personal, intimate relationship or a business relationship or not at all, wherever two people need to come to some kind of an agreement. So when I work with my clients and I hear about, you know, what's going on in their relationships or things that when they swept something underneath the rug, I mean, that's the one, you know, it was like, well, we can't talk about that. And it's like, oh, well, if you don't talk about it, there's a huge cost to both parties, but particularly the person that I'm working with, that they're not saying what they need to say. So it's actually giving people words that they can say to open the conversation and be authentic, be coming from the heart, speak the truth from the heart, being vulnerable. I'll give an example. So recently, one of my clients, I knew that there was some, you know, tension or, you know, in his personal relationship. And he had not, it took him a really, really long time, like years, to tell his wife some certain things that were not working for him. For an example, how she speaks to him. And they'd been through some couples workshops and this and that. And so it came up again that she was starting this behavior. And he was like, well, I don't want to tell her now because fill in the blank. This is happening, that's happening, this is happening. And so I, you know, just really, I don't say challenged, but held the mirror up to have him see that by not saying something, by not opening the conversation, that the way that you communicate is not working for me, is causing me to feel this and that and to keep it in I statements and stuff like that. So he ended up talking to his wife about the behaviors that were happening and, you know, what that they could possibly do about it. And there was an upset, and then it dissipated, and they ended up going on this trip together. And he said they're now closer than ever just by being willing to speak his truth about what wasn't working for him. And he just did a masterful job of, you know, telling her, you know, my intent is that we stay together and we work this through and I'm here for you, and really helping the other person feel safe, which is really important. And then, and also saying, and these are the things, you know, that I'm experiencing. And when that happens, I feel like this, and how I'd really like to feel is like this. So so that's one example. It makes us be real. It makes us be vulnerable and say the things that, you know, we don't want to say.
Yeah, one of the things, like, I, you know, when I'm working with clients, you know, dealing with a lot of the communication issues, you may run across this, but getting through the anger layer, you know, like the anger, because we're not allowed to talk about our anger in our society. You know, we have to like go pray it away or do something else with it than actually disclose it. And I've had several clients in the past who their communication issues always go back to a moment when they were a child and their mouth was washed out with soap, you know, where they learned like what they had to say was not important enough and it wasn't valued and it was not to be said at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, trying to move through a lot of that stuff and getting people to move through so that they can be happy. Because I think, for me, you know, once I can talk about it, I'm good.
Yeah, and having two people that are willing to have that conversation without reacting and taking it personal or becoming defensive. I was in a relationship, an intimate personal relationship, about 5 or 6 years ago, but it couldn't last because I could never speak my truth. Because anything I said, the other person just took it personal, and or they got defensive. And it's like, it takes two people. And, you know, perhaps if I was as skilled now, then, it may have been different, but I still feel maybe I would, you know, been able to speak my truth sooner and be able to determine if that was a relationship where there's that agreement that we can speak about it. But so, yes, and it does all come back to, you know, what we experienced as a child. So, you know, I lived with a rageaholic. My father just had only two tones of voice, silent or raging. So, you know, the kind of stress that put in my body, you know, so there's been a lot of fear about me speaking my truth, and I, you know, and I still have a ways to go, but it's really being able to start clearing out, like you said, really coming to terms with the feelings that we had as a child when we spoke up or why we didn't speak up, either case.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's good. You know, there are so many people nowadays that are, you know, studying like conscious communication, nonviolent communication, and that, you know, when they learn it, then they go out and make a difference, and it really is creating some positive ripples, because I think that communication, as far as, you know, we have a voice and the languaging that we use and the tone that we use in order to engage that is like essentially important to either get our point across or be able to express ourselves more positively.
Absolutely. I I taught coaching skills at it's not a university, or maybe it is, but it was in the nursing program. But, you know, and I they were all, you know, in their early 20s, most of them anyway, a few older students. But I said to them, if you ever get a chance or it's ever offered to you to take any course in communication or leadership, take it. You know, it's like there's just nothing more important than working on our communication skills. And it does open up, you know, our childhood wounds, and that's what we're all here to do anyway, is to clear and cleanse and release that which doesn't work for us anymore.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing too, like, was astonishing to me, like, when I was learning a lot of communication stuff about my own communication, is I was really shocked to find out that there's two areas of communication. And a guru friend of mine that I was going to at the time, his whole take on everything was money, business is business, and everything else is everything else. So one of the things I learned was that, you know, in a business, when you're in a corporate meeting, it's not personal. And if you work in a business setting and you're getting paid an hourly wage, like, there's no reason your personal issues should come into that meeting. You know, it's business, so it should be defined as business. And I was shocked, like, in the American culture, like, how many people don't understand that and are not trained well. And so everything becomes a personal event, like, in business. And it really shouldn't be. It should be about the business in general. When I was learning a lot about communication, I was really shocked that, even though I've learned nonviolent communication and all this other stuff, but nobody really ever taught me, like, my personal stuff just should not be coming up. It shouldn't be engaging with other people, you know, in a business setting. And so,
well, we take who we are to our business.
Yeah.
So if those things aren't cleared up in our personal life, we're taking them to, you know, our weekly meetings.
Yeah, which becomes a personal battle zone, right? Instead of... Hi, Regina?
Yes.
We just had a momentary commercial break. So, anyway, would you go ahead and go on about how it was developed, the human design, and all the components that make it happen?
Okay. The human design system was coined the first system of the Aquarian Age. It came through in 1987 in January. Through a gentleman who lived in Ibiza, Spain, which is Ibiza is known as the spring break island, you know, to go to for bikinis and all that good stuff. So anyway, he lived in Ibiza, Spain, and his name is Ra Urihu. It's R-A and then H-R U. I'm sorry, I'm raw. U-R-U-H-H-Y-H-U. And he was someone that had been a teacher and also been very successful in Canada with a media business and marketing. And he was pretty much a renegade, you know, basically living off the land. He had this little hut that he lived in, and one night he went home, and he could see that there was a light on, and his dog was acting strange, and he went into this little hut thing that he lived in, and for the next 8 days and eight nights, he was downloaded with all this information. And it was a pretty dramatic shamanic experience. And he just wrote all this information down, and then he enrolled some of the people that he knew to help him decipher it, and it's based on our birth information. And so when someone gives their birth information, then at that time they drew out a chart. There's now software programs, and he would give to the people that came to him, like, this is what your chart says to me. Do you relate to that? Does that feel like truth to you? And, you know, everyone was like, oh, my God, this is so accurate. So that's really how it got proven that it was a viable system, was by him doing thousands of readings. And then from there, the training began, and they put some software together. And so it came through in 1987, and I found it in 1999. So I'm still one of the earlier students of human design. What it's comprised of, it's a synthesized. It's not one or the other. It's all of them. And it is comprised of the esoteric knowledge, is the I Ching, the 64 hexagrams of the I Ching, the planets, the astrology system, but it's not astrology. And it is the Kabbalah and the chakra system. And what happens when we get somebody's birth information, we put that into the software program, and it brings up a body graph. And you can see the chakra systems, and we look at 9 chakra systems versus the traditional 7 chakra systems. And so each of those chakra systems holds a particular type of energy. It has a function. For example, the root center is where our adrenal sits, and it's where we pick up stress from the planet, from just life. Like, you know, you got to get this done by a certain amount of time, or, you know, the store is closing in 10 minutes. I mean, any kind of stress that comes into us comes to us through the root center. So in looking at somebody's chart, I'll just stay with the root center, looking at somebody's chart, we can see how they react to stress, how they tolerate stress. Are they more susceptible to having adrenal burnout? It's also, I say it's like the gas station. You pull into the gas station and you get fuel. Are you getting diesel fuel, or are you getting high octane or you getting regular. So all of that sits within the root center, and I could talk for a day and a half about the root center. But basically, each of the centers holds a body of information. So we can really see how people maneuver in this world, not just by the root center, but by looking at each of the centers, the nine different centers in the body, and how they show up when, at the time of birth. So we look at not only the conscious information, which is the date that somebody was born, but we also calculate a second chart, which is combined together, which is their unconscious information. And this is really key, that astrology only looks at one wheel, and we look at two wheels, and we look at people's unconscious programming. So what you inherited, what came from your mother and your father and your grandparents, is coded in there. And so it's like it's a little bit more, it's hidden. It's in the unconscious. And as we all are becoming more and more aware now, the more we know about our unconscious, the more we can maneuver in this lifetime. It's what keeps us from manifesting and creating, is our unconscious patterns. So there's that component to it. And there's also, you know, some modern science thrown in there, and things that came through raw in 87 were not necessarily known to science, like neutrinos. You know, they've been able to prove that neutrinos actually do carry energy. So there's modern science thrown in it, too. So it sounds complex, and but it's really not. I think it's can be so practical.
The charts are trippy because you did mine quite a while ago, but they look like Egyptian, like something from Egypt, you know, with the little head on them and the little lines of energy and how they crisscross.
Yeah.
And also, too, weren't there like components of, and I don't know if I have this right or not, but there was like the I De Ching, right? Weren't there like several like things that were kind of put together?
That was what I just mentioned. The I Ching, the planets, the chakra systems, and the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah is the branches. So it's all synthesized together. And what the I Ching, the information that he brought in, it doesn't speak to I Ching like from the Book of Changes, though there are some similarities, certainly. I mean, the first hexagram is called the creative in any way that you look at the I Ching. But how we interpret it, it has a little bit more of a modern language to it, so that it's applicable to today. Because the original I Ching was pretty patriarchal. And you know, is pretty old, so it was really about, you know, brought into the modern world. Now, just to speak about the I Ching, the 64 hexagrams, there's a direct correlation between those and the 64 codons of the DNA. You can just Google I Ching and the DNA, and there's a lot of research that's already been done. So when by knowing your human design and knowing which hexagrams are activated in your chart, then you're knowing what your DNA is. Okay, so we know now that we can change your DNA. Well, in human design, you know, we can look at someone's DNA, and I'll just already said that first hexagram is the creative. Well, there's a lower frequency and a higher frequency of that expression. And so we can tell by people's behavior whether they're expressing it from a lower frequency or a higher frequency. And from knowing your human design, and someone can point that out and say, well, do you see yourself in these types of behaviors, which are repressed or reactive behaviors, or do you see yourself more in the higher frequency? Like, what's the real gift of the creative? You know, it's yang, creative, pure. It's the most yang gate that there is the first gate, which is the creative. So it's modern language. It's directly connected to our DNA. As I said, it is a path of transformation. You can raise your frequency by understanding your human design and understanding, you know, the different components of it.
I know for me, because I think you probably, I don't know, I'm thinking like around 2006 you did my chart, maybe?
Whenever you were in San Diego, for that short time you were in San Diego, that's when we connected.
Yeah, and I remember the thing for me, like, because I can only talk about my experience with it, that really helped me was that everything that I was doing and the shamanism and all the education and the teaching, you know, was already all there in the chart. And
yeah, but that's
really
what you're
helped
here to
me
do.
To be like, okay, well, great, this is it.
Yeah, so
don't get away from it.
Yeah, exactly. No, you know, yeah, that you are a teacher, and that was all over your chart, and you know, and not necessarily in a normal classroom, which would never work for you anyway. So yeah, it's very validating for people to know, hey, that is authentic for me, or yeah, I've always felt that way, or you know, it's life changing for many, many people, and it's especially when it touches in on what you already sense about yourself, but nobody's ever spoken the words back to you. It has a really different language, and the thing about that I love about it is that it's the polarity. There's, you know, we have all spectrums of it, and so it's like nothing is really a negative and nothing's really a positive. It just is.
Yeah, and the other thing too I liked about the human design is, you know, because I've studied the regular Western astrology, now I'm kind of studying more along the biodynamic lines, the anthroposophy type astrology, mm-hmm. which is a whole different thing for growing food and stuff like that. But one of the things about the human design was that in the Western astrology, you know, things would come up and you were like, okay, well, I'm supposed to be making money during this time frame. Why aren't I making any money? And in the human design chart, I learned that there wasn't going to be any money until a certain point in time. And that, you know, I have to, what you called, live off tree bark. And that, you know, be a tree bark eater.
That was funny, yeah.
For years.
Yeah, you and I are both designed that if we have to, we can live off a tree bark. You and I have that in common.
Yeah, it was helpful because it made me not push for the times where I thought, like, money was supposed to be coming in. Because I was supposed to be working on something else, and that I just had to really start learning to trust in spirit, you know, to float me wherever I'm supposed to go. And that was helpful for me, you know. And it also was helpful for me because I realized, I think, and when you read my chart, you said somewhere around 50, everything, you know, that part of my life would start coming in.
Right.
And so it made it easier because I was like, okay, well, it's not going to be happening, so I need to focus in on something else. And just be happy eating those ramen noodles.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said to be able to just, what I'm hearing is that you just rested in it, you know, rested in who you are and being comfortable in the body that you're in and being more grounded and being willing to go with the flow. Where without the information, we're fighting or struggling or thinking things should be a certain way. And then when someone says, no, this is the way, does that feel true for you? I mean, it's got to feel truth in your body. That's, you know, it's not about human design says it so. It's like, how does that feel for you?
Yeah, no, there are a lot of things that, for me personally, that helped me a lot to stop fighting so much. Because, you know, I've never been normal. You know, I have never, never, never fit in. And I don't fit in usually with groups I'm supposed to fit in with. So my whole life, you know, I've always wanted to have a life where, you know, oh, I'm going to get married. Oh, I'm going to have kids. Oh, that white picket fence. But for me, it's just not a reality. And looking at my life kind of maybe, I had been looking at my life like what I had been missing. or what I had thought I had been missing. And when the human design stuff, you know, kicked in, I realized, okay, well, that's just a reality I'm never going to fit into, and I'm okay with that. So being able to, like you said, rest into who I am, the truth of who I am, and, you know.
That's called authenticity.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, just living an authentic life. It's like for someone else. You know, having kids in the white fence, that's for them. Not most people that come to human design, because most of them, you know, to be attracted to this kind of work, you're a bit of a renegade or you don't fit in, and then this really explains, it, you know, your individuality. It's the science of individuality.
Right.
And so, yeah, it just
so what's
allows people.
What's the strangest chart you've ever seen, like one that you just... You know, usually in work, you know, there's always that really strange person, you know, that was like a turning point for us, or like maybe a human design chart that really blew your mind, or is there anything like that?
You know, I'll say it more in general terms. It's like a part of it is where people's consciousness is when they get their session. Are they open to hearing about themselves? And some people are designed to not listen. They're designed to be deaf. They are not hearing. And the reason they don't hear is because they're so individual that they can't really take that much in from other people, because then they wouldn't be as individual as they are. Okay, that's one piece of it. The other piece of it is some people have really challenging designs. They have a really hard time seeing their parts in their interactions with people. It's like it's always somebody out there. They're always looking out there. Something's going to come along and something's going to happen out there. So there are more challenging designs than others. There are some that are easier to rest in, to use that word again, to rest in who they are, because they can hear it, and their chart isn't so fragmented. Some people have a little fragmented chart. And even so, with that being said, there are strategies for each chart. There's a strategy for people to be able to come to the higher frequency, so to speak. So as far as someone really odd and unusual, yes, I've had those, and I've had probably I've done hundreds of readings, and I've had probably four or five people that I could say, wow, they really know who they are. They've really been living this. They've somehow through whatever work they've already done, you know, they're really in their groove, and that is so cool. And then that type of session is just like totally validating for them, and just, you know, amplifies it even more.
Yeah, no, it's really a cool thing. Okay, so we're coming kind of in the home stretch of the show. Is there anything like, this is the part I always kind of ask people, like, is there anything like I haven't asked you about that you want to talk about? Any ideas or thoughts or information that you want to impart to listeners?
Let's see. Yeah, I would say that unpredictable world that we're living in right now, you know, it's really important for people to have a daily practice and to have something that they do every day that connects them to their breath, to their heart, to their center. And, you know, it's like whatever you choose, you know, a little bit of exercise every day. You know, human design has been something that's really worked for me. And but there's other things that I do besides that that really keep me centered every day. And I just want people to really take really, really good care of themselves and find the things that work for them and follow their instincts and not their mind.
So give us a taste of what you do every day to keep yourself grounded. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay. My routine is that I get a hot lemon water. Excuse me, it's lime. Hot lime water in the morning, and I sit down and journal for a little bit, and I pull a tarot card every day at that time. And right now I'm doing a particular process for manifesting, so I spend time writing and doing that particular process. I walk, and just depending on how much time I have, between 10 minutes and an hour. I stretch. I take a shower. I listen to inspirational recordings or, you know, webinars that I have access to almost every day. And I have an evening process that I go through before I go to bed. There's some journaling that I do before I go to bed. And I listen to, I think it's the HypnoSync. I have a HypnoSync, a couple of different CDs that I listen to as I fall asleep. And almost all of that is every single day.
That's good. It's good when you're, you know, when you're clear enough that you can have a practice like that. And I think that it's essential.
Yeah. And if the listeners have one or... And then you get away from it, get yourself back as soon as possible. I mean, even if it's 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes at night that you do any of the things that I mentioned or anything else, maybe if you know Tai Chi or something like that, it's just really important every day to invest in yourself, in your, you know, maintaining your body, you know, mind and spirit.
Yeah, no, when I had my brain tumor, I ended up getting on a strict practice, you know, like in order to heal it alternatively. And if you want to combat like any kind of terminal illness or any kind of illness, you've got to journal, you've got to breathe, you've got to get some exercise, you got to have some personal time, and you definitely have to have time to contemplate, you know, to be able to circulate your own thoughts. For me, that's a pretty important component. And it's good that I like to hear other people that are really busy doing their own work and liking it, not fighting your way through it, but actually look forward to it. That's the other whole piece.
Yeah, recently I had a training contract that was, you know, out of the house working every day for like 2 months. It's like, okay, what's essential? What can I do in 10 minutes in the morning? You know, and then on my days off, I would have more time. But it was like, I still, you know, it's like you shorten it up. You know, you still do some of my yoga stretches and things like that. Just, you know, so you just do whatever you can within the time frame that you have.
Yeah, sometimes you're in the car and you're like, okay, guides, make sure you keep an eye on the road. I need a 5-minute breathing exercise while I'm flying down the highway.
Exactly.
So anything else? Tell
people
really
how they can get a hold of me, I guess. It's Regina
Concatelli.
And you can reach me at 619-528-0892. I love talking to people. 619-528-0892, and my website is AlignWithYourDesign, A-L-I-G-N, AlignWithYourDesign.com. And I do once a month free calls on the very basics of human design. It's usually on the last Tuesday of the month. And I write articles, and so, and there's, you know, some recordings and stuff like that on my website. And, you know, so I, you know, put a lot out there for people that are just learning about human design.
So any, just with a few more minutes to go, maybe like 3 or 4, is there any astrological events that you see that are important that are coming up in the between now and, say, the end of the year that we should take note of and pay attention to?
I don't necessarily watch the transits as much as I do the energy. Let's see.
Well, give us an idea about that.
I will say I do. I mean, this is another part of my practice is that I read, like, I don't know, at least six astrology reports every month. And I've got a couple, you know, different psychics or mediums or channels or whatever that I get information on, and, you know, just unusual stuff comes by me. And I kind of just synthesize and kind of take a pulse on what's going on, and it helps me, like, know when to move forward and when to hold back and when to be quiet. And so I would say that for this month is that for people to wait for the new moon, which is on the 17th, that the energy is going to open up a little bit, and that the energy is just changing really quickly. So what was up yesterday may be down tomorrow. The energy is sometimes choppy. The energy is sometimes smooth. And this comes back to that daily practice of just checking in with yourself and being, you know, checking in with your intuition. What's the most important thing I need to do today? And to listen to that. One of the things that I do in the evening is I, you know, check in. It's like, so what did my intuition tell me today? And did I follow what it said? Not like from a judgment, oh, I'm bad, I'm wrong, but it's just like just kind of checking in with yourself. So I think that really, let's see, never, you know, I'm not going to talk about 2012 as far as December. There's going to be a shift. And there's, you know, what can we do to prepare for the shift that's coming in December? I think it's everything that Bridget and I have just talked about. It's like, what are you doing every day to stay connected body, mind, and spirit? You know, what kind of habits are supporting you, and what kind of habits are distracting you? You know, so it's not like we got to hurry up we're running out of time, that kind of thing. It's like, no, it's like, how are you in this very moment? How present are you in this very moment to be able to go through whatever this change is going to be, whatever this energy that's coming in? I'm extremely excited and have no idea why.
I think it's good, though. And, you know,
but I think, you know, a change from, you know, what we've been experiencing on this dense, planet will, things are just a little bit more smoother and kinder.
One of the other things too that I see a lot of is people having to kind of learn to let their ego go a little bit to embrace other people. The whole island, I'm an island thing is, disintegrating. And I see that for a lot of people, and, their island is sinking, you know, and having the ability to kind of open up and see who's out on their horizon and maybe new people to connect with, and us helping each other as communities, you know. So we're a chain of islands connected.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the ego has its value, and it's just being aware of when it's, you know, it's taking over, when you're not spending time in your heart and your ego's running the show. And there's a lot of support for that right now, and the energy that's coming through is really supporting us in making that transition right now to drop into our heart.
And open our hands up and reach out and grab who's in front of you and give them a big hug. Bring them in.
I'm all for that. Absolutely. More hugs.
Well, thanks so much for putting up with my craziness today, the technology of, you know, what we have to deal with during Mercury retrograde and the flips and flops. And thanks so much for coming on my show.
Well, thank you. I've loved this, like, free-floating, and you just throwing these questions at me. I have no idea what you were going to ask me. So it's been fun connecting with you, and I look forward to hearing, you know, what your listeners are taking away from our conversation.
Yeah, well, hopefully they're taking away new positive things for their future. And if I get any emails or anything interested in human design, sometimes I do get some emails, I will send them your way.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. I love being of service in that way.
Well, good, good. Well, I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to close the show. And
okay.
Thanks so much for such a great interview.
Bridget, thank you so much. Namaste.
Bye-bye.